Hey, what's going on?
What's up, guys?
We're live once again for this week's episode of Eigen Bros.
Mm-hmm. And we got another spooky one.
Yeah. Cue that music. We want to actually talk about piggybacking off of Joe Rogan's recent guest.
Commander Fravor.
Commander Fravor. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he talked about his experience with a UFO while he was flying in his, I guess it was a Super Hornet. I don't remember what jet he said. But yeah, we just went over that podcast segment.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we also kind of tied it back to Bob Lazar and gave our opinions on that.
Yeah.
We had several videos on this one. So we, you know, had some videos talking about what we thought about some of the technology Bob described.
Mm-hmm.
And we also shared some of the things that we thought how the mainstream was taking it too. So Michio Kaku addressing it.
Yeah. Out of all people, he's, you know, doesn't surprise me with him, especially.
Yeah, but he's been pretty skeptical over the years. He's remained, consistent.
Maybe so.
Because I've seen him in other videos back in the days where he wouldn't even,
give it a
time of day. Yeah.
No, that's fair. Yeah, so let us know what you think, actually, about this episode when you go ahead and listen to it, because we actually are curious about where you stand at the end of this, because this is probably the first time any mainstream evidence has been put out there like this.
Yeah.
Once
again, guys, make sure you share, comment, like, subscribe.
Yeah.
Make sure you subscribe or follow our Twitter, which is at EigenBros.
Mm-hmm.
And then also check out our website, EigenBros.com. You know, you can get on the mailing list there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. We'll see you in a few.
Yeah, thanks. 3, 2, 1. Hold on. I got to make sure I get the right one.
You son of a bitch.
Damn it. Oh, man, come on.
What are you trying to get?
Bro, you know what I'm trying to get, man.
Tell me. Let's see.
Yes. I got it.
Part 3. UFOs.
Okay, yeah, that was too loud. yes,
second welcome. Try, but that's still pretty good.
Welcome to this week's episode. Another special episode, I would say, of Eigen Bros.
UFO series.
Yeah, this is our...
Part three.
Technically. Part two. Well, for me,
We talked a little bit of...
Second serious one for me, though.
Second serious. Oh, yeah. I would consider the Bob Lazar one kind of serious.
But I don't remember our first one.
It was the one that we did with Bob Lazar before it was even on Joe Rogan.
Mm.
And then we talked about the A-Tip videos that we will be talking about today.
Okay. Check it out. Check out those previous episodes. I don't remember.
Yes, indeed.
My memory fails me.
You only had two, Juan. How do you not remember?
I just remember the Bob Lazar one with Joe.
So you don't remember the first one we did with Bob Lazar?
I don't remember the first one.
Okay. We were a little bit rustier on that one.
First of all, let me make some corrections since we're on the topic.
All right, let's do it. Let's start.
So a commenter, we got into a little bit of a tiff, right? Mm. There's a commenter. I don't remember the username, but...
On what platform?
I think it was the Bob Lazar one with Joe.
This is on YouTube you were getting an argument?
Yeah, yeah. No. We somebody said, well, because you made the argument, or we made the argument, I guess.
Yeah.
About if there were actual UFOs, we would be able to detect them in some form or manner.
Gravitational waves?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I looked a little bit into it, and it's a lot trickier detecting gravitational waves than we thought. So it's a little bit challenging because to detect gravitational waves, you know, we detect like the collision of neutron stars and stuff like those gravitational waves. And a gravitational perturbation, even like just... like a UFO, I don't think would make enough of a perturbation for us right now with our current technology.
Well, we already stated that.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. We said if the bandwidth was permitting.
Yeah.
Who knows, right?
Yeah. But that's
the thing is, why I even said that was because gravitational waves that are generated by these crafts could be significant. You know, it's just like we don't really know, and they're very close in proximity. So that's why I was guessing that, because you would have, like, if you had an aircraft going back and forth, you would be able to see some kind of
ripples, right?
Yeah, rippling effect. Yeah. And it's closer than any other gravitational thing that we know of besides the Earth itself. So but that's why I said that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
So for the record, gravitational waves are transverse waves, meaning like they have spatial components that are, how would you describe?
I would just say transverse waves are like water waves. So if you drop a water in another pool of water, you're going to see that splashing in those wave ripples. Yeah. And then, of course, you have the other form, longitudinal waves.
Yeah. But it's a little bit strange because they're generated through, like, the theoretical models show quadrupoles. It's a little too technical. But for the layman out there, it's not your traditional, like, transverse waves, because with gravitational waves, some parts are, like, compressed. You can sort of think like an image, like, with an aspect ratio. You know, have you seen those memes where there's like Keanu Reeves where it's...
Yeah, and he's a tiny
compressed
version.
Yeah. But it's still Keanu Reeves, but it's just like he's stretched out or pushed down. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like the
but
image...
What does that have to do with the...
So gravitational waves are sort of the same. They're either compressed, like they're compressed either longitudinally, like you can think about it in four... You can think about it in like a page. Like let's say we're looking at a paper, right?
Okay.
And you're preserving the volume of the paper.
Okay.
So you can sort of think like the aspect ratio of the image is stretching or shrinking in that way. You get what I'm saying?
I don't really see it.
Yeah, it's like go on Photoshop with you kids today with your Photoshop. Go on Photoshop and
Gimp is better. It's free.
And play around with it. But yeah, it's sort of that kind of analogy there. But in any case, somebody was saying that you would need a mass of about 10 to the 6th power in kilograms. 10 to the 6th.
10 million.
10,
or 1 million.
1 million. About a million, at least a million. 1 meter away from your gravitational detector to detect anything right now with current tech that we have. So it's a little bit limited in detecting these things. And even then, you'd have to have like good technology. Now, the main technology for some of the UFOs are like gravitational amplification.
Yeah. At least that's the claim.
Yeah, that's the claim.
And I need to actually address that real quick. Sure. So, of course, with this UFO podcast, we want to talk about the Commander Fravor episode Joe Rogan.
Yeah, so, that's like the main, this is the main topic.
Yeah. So we want to talk about Fravor because, you know, he came onto the scene, you know, guns a-blazing, didn't expect this at all.
Yeah.
I know, Juan, you just text me. You're like, you got to watch this podcast with Commander Fravor. Here we go again. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah. What did you feel right off the bat watching it?
I was like, this is better than Bob. Like, he to me seems like a, like, if you thought Bob Lazar was good, like, I think Commander Fravor is like 5 times better probably.
And why is that?
In the sense that he seems more trustworthy in his descriptions to me. Although I will admit, with this podcast, I didn't get to do as much research as I would have liked on Fravor, so I didn't get to actually do any background checks or anything and see if he's, you know, actually what he claims. But my intuition, of course, that's not really anything, but sure. I will lend myself to just accepting it for now because he seems legitimate.
Yeah.
Of course, Bob Lazar seemed legitimate too. Mm-hmm. But even Bob Lazar gave off a little bit of red flags to me initially. Commander Fravor has not really given me any real red flags. And that's a good sign.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
I wish I had remembered my first point because I was going to say something
about
related to what you were talking about there.
Oh, with the gravitational wave stuff?
I can't remember.
Oh, gravitational amplification stuff?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, of course, Fravor was accompanied by, you know, Dumbass McGee.
Okay. Yeah. Let me comment on that because Jeremy, the guy, he's... okay, if you have something to say about this, he's the kind of person that if you attach to UFO stuff, no one, like, it loses credibility.
Exactly. I fucking am sick of this fucker, man. He's like, it's a movement and people we're gathering and it's like, it's really coming together. And then he's talking about shit that he's no idea about.
He has car salesman energy.
He's what?
Car salesman energy.
No, he is like
he's trying to sell you something.
I wouldn't say that. I would say Trump has car salesman energy.
Okay.
He has more of hippie believy energy.
Yeah.
Like he's already bought into the whole narrative.
He's trying to
and
sell
everything
you.
He does is trying to push the narrative.
Well, for me, he's trying to sell me healing crystals and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But his energy is more like wooey, hands in the air, the people with their hands in the air in church.
Okay. Kumbaya is what
you're
saying. Yeah,
exactly. But my point was he automatically just assumes the gravitational wave manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to tie in all of this together with Bob Lazar, with Fravor.
Yeah.
And I think this is just a bad approach. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck Jeremy Corbell. Don't listen to anything he's saying in this podcast because he has no idea what he's talking about. So just saying that, if you haven't listened to the podcast with Joe Rogan yet, just fast forward anything with Jeremy. He's useless.
Yeah. Sorry, Jeremy.
Just annoyed the shit out of me the whole time.
I mean, Jeremy, if you're listening to this, dude, it's
you're too much. Just get the fuck off.
Just tone it down, man. Just
we're
not there for you. We're there for the guy who has who's the source. You're like the funnel.
Yeah. Like it would be much better. Like I'm glad Jeremy's getting these guys together and actually giving them a platform, but he just needs to stay out of it.
Yeah.
He just muddies the waters and makes it less and less credible.
Yes.
So what I wanted to address was Bob's relation to Fravor.
Yes.
So we kind of settled on the more bunk category of Bob.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty much convinced that Bob's bunk. One of the main things is the fact that one, Bob Lazar cannot even name a major advisor of his, which he claims he got two master's degrees, one at MIT, I believe. And did he say the other one was Caltech?
Some.
Do you remember?
Some Ivy League.
It's some top tier institution for physics. Mm-hmm. He can't even name a major advisor. And actually, I was trying to find a video earlier for Juan to pull up where he's actually asked in a bar. You guys maybe will be able to find it in YouTube. I couldn't find it in time. Maybe if I can even find it later, I might be able to post it if permitting. But anyway, he gets asked by somebody in a bar.
Yeah.
They say, name your professors at MIT or Caltech or something. He names two guys from this junior college. So this is back in like the 80s, I think, or the 90s. And I think he probably just didn't think that video would surface.
Yeah.
So that's already really two bad signs on Bob's legitimacy. Then the fact that, of course, they can't even find any records of his education at Caltech and MIT is the final stone in the coffin. And then,
but that's also rather convenient. If I play devil's advocate, it's a little bit like, well, you could have scrubbed his records and been like, just to discredit him, fine.
But the thing is, you cannot scrub his entire life. Like,
sure.
To be in college for a master's degree is going to require you to be there for physics at least, like, what would you say, around 3 years? Two at the minimum.
No, I mean, for a PhD program?
For a master's.
Oh, for a master's.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you got at least two to 3 years.
Yeah, so he'd have to be at each of those institutions for at least a bare minimum of 2 years.
Yeah.
So he would have to have no records of anything, like no classmates that can corroborate your story.
No
instructors that speak up for you.
Yeah.
You know, no like bars that he went to where people seen him. Like for none of that to happen is just unthinkable.
Taught him, or he didn't teach any classes, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Right? No people that. He had students for his TA assignment.
Yeah.
Like, to have none of that is just
unthinkable.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, most of all, even looking at the psychology, right, you may not even have to look that deep into who is more, who looks like they're telling the truth more.
But it helps.
The commander, just right off the bat, he is able to go to a high level of detail about scenarios.
Well, Bob is too.
Bob. In some ways.
His story feels legitimate, though, to me. Bob Lazar's story feels very good.
Yes.
On first
approach. I mean, just to kind of recap our opinions about this. So I think he may have seen something and he's doing his best to describe what he saw.
Who is this? Bob?
Bob.
Okay.
But of course he's filling in the gaps and that kind of thing. So
I don't think Bob Lazar even saw anything. Mm-hmm. That's my guess. Mm-hmm. Or something's going on that I just don't know. You know, it's just, I can't really say, but I know that from what I'm seeing, I'm leaning more heavily towards his story is bunk than not. Mm. And the fact that he doesn't, another thing is he doesn't address the isotope, which is such a basic thing that anybody would ever think of.
I could have named an unknown isotope.
Yeah. And even we can get to one of the videos where they talk about this. But yeah, the fact that he doesn't name the isotope of element 115 is a huge, mongous red flag because that would be the first thing anyone would ask if you went on that project as a physicist.
He's just like, unobtainium.
Yeah.
It's unobtainable here.
Exactly.
Let's plan it.
And he names something how it's in the just some random element within the island of stability, which everybody already knew about for a long time.
If you've taken a physics class up to the master's level, you probably know that.
No, if you've taken a physics class in undergraduate, like the second semester of undergraduate, you probably know this. I knew this when I was before I even took any higher level physics classes.
There you go. Check your internet privilege though, dude.
That's true.
yeah.
But everybody gets the internet now, so.
yeah. But him back in the day, that might have been like few people know what he's talking about.
Any physicist knows though.
Yeah, nowadays much. For sure. Yeah.
So that is those are two of the main reasons why Bob's bunk. So like Bob's story is good. But then Fravor, to me, his story is great.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, he's next level to me.
Fravor, the way he provides information is also, I liked how he was able to give facts. And then the fact that you're able to actually produce some results, right?
Yeah.
Like you're able to recount the exact details of what's going on. He's corroborating things that, you know, that most people have seen, actually, even just taking his account into consideration, where you're looking at objects that are like sort of like cigarette style is what he was saying.
Tic-tac. Yeah.
That actually is funny because there's a history of UFOs being reported. You know, I can think about one account back in, I think I mentioned in the last podcast, I wasn't able to find it, but there was a town.
I found it and it was under bunk.
Really?
Yeah.
There was a town in Texas. I'll tell it anyway because it's kind of a...
But you don't want to retell
it. But there's historical record, though.
Okay. We'll just keep it brief.
There's some historical record, though, that shows that there was an anomaly seen in the sky in some town in West Texas. And they didn't really have the language to describe it, but they reported in a local newspaper, and they have... This is where they found it. That
I think in the Rational Wiki, though, I found a lot of evidence where it was bunk, so
okay.
I probably wouldn't even go too much
okay
into that.
okay all right, but yeah, that's one of those that they mentioned, the cigarette shit.
Yeah, but anyway, let's pull up one of the videos, Juan. Mm-hmm. So I want you to pull up the one with H3. So if you guys are familiar with H3 podcast, I'm a huge fan of Ela Klein, H3. They actually had a guy, Mick West, on the podcast. He's a skeptic, like a professional skeptic. And he kind of talks a little bit about some of the things that about Bob Lazar and kind of goes through them real quickly and how they're bunk. And I just wanted to pull that up real quick so we can just see what he's talking about.
Yeah, yeah. So here we go. Let's. This is Ethan Klein on Bob Lazar in Area 51. This was September 4th, I think. Okay. So
try to get the mic to pick up that sound too, Juan. Maybe you want to turn up the volume.
Gotcha. Molecule 115 discovered since.
Yeah.
So that's an element. That's compelling, right? To be like, oh, I was working on this, but now they discovered it.
It sounds compelling. Yeah, it sounds compelling. You understand the history of chemistry as being a continuous process of filling in the periodic table. Mm. Like all of the elements, they have an atomic number, which is the number of protons in the nucleus. Mm-hmm. So you start out with number one, which is hydrogen, which has one, and then helium has two, and then oxygen has four. I might be wrong. But you just get more and more.
Oxygen's
and the
eight.
The ones that with a low number are very stable, especially when they're in molecular forms. But higher up, they become more and more unstable. So they're very, very hard. You don't find them in nature, basically. So all the ones that are high up on the table, they had to synthesize. They had to actually create them by using some kind of radiation method. And as you got further and further along, they get harder and harder to synthesize. So when Bob Lazar suggested element 115 with 115 protons in the nucleus, they just hadn't got to it yet.
Yeah.
But it was one of the ones that was the next one along. I think they were up to about 111 or 112 there. They skip them occasionally because the odd ones are harder or something like that. But it's something that was inevitably going to be synthesized at some point. And when
I mean, that's pretty much the crux of it. Like, you're not going to... If you had taken, like Terrence was saying, if you had taken some level of nuclear physics or at that level, you would know that these artificial elements, it's a limit to engineering.
Right, right. Yeah. So basically, if you just wanted a second opinion on that, Mick West also researched that as well.
Yeah.
And he verified that.
Yeah, so you said he was a skeptic?
Yeah, he's a professional skeptic.
Professional skeptic.
I think so, but I think he actually did something else I cannot remember. He has some legitimate, interesting background, but he found himself having to disprove or debunk a lot of things, and he took it upon himself to try to be more of a professional skeptic, debunking all of this hoaxy stuff.
Okay. So one of the things, in case you haven't actually seen this episode, we'll play a little clip about this former commander pilot's actually encounter with this object so that you can become familiar a little bit. And even then, it's speaking about skepticism, it's a little bit hard. Actually, we can let him tell a story and then we'll comment a little bit about it.
Sounds good.
The object we're going to end up looking for is right in the middle of the clock. And we are at the 6 o'clock position. And my wingman is off to my left side, so she's further down with her WISO. So as we're looking around, we look to the right, and yesterday was a perfect example out here. The water is perfectly calm, no white caps. I mean, it's literally a perfect San Diego, California day. And we see white water, something like if you see a seamount, rock underwater when you're standing on the shore and the waves are breaking over it and you're like, what is that? It's usually because there's a rock under the water. So it looks like that, but it's about the size of a 737. It actually kind of has a shape of like a cross, and it's pointing to the east. So you've got the long part going east-west, and you got a couple of things going north and south. So as we're looking at it, because that kind of draws our eyes, we're like, oh, that's kind of odd. We look down, and the WISO in the other airplane comes up and says, hey, Skipper, do you? And that's about what he gets out of his mouth. And I'm kind of looking at the same thing. I go, dude, do you see that? What is that thing? And what we see is this white tic-tac-looking object just above the surface of the water, pointing north-south, and it's going north-south, east-west. It's just radically moving forward, back, left, right, at will. And it's moving around the disturbance, the white water that we see.
How big is this thing?
Over time, it's about 40 feet long. And the way I estimate that is, I mean, I got a lot of time fighting other airplanes, so it's about the size of a Hornet fuselage. So that's why you say 40 feet. And this thing's just going left. So the first thing you see when you look down, you go, and this is with our eyes, it's not sensors. Right, so we're looking down at this thing, and first thing you think is helicopter, right? Helicopters typically stay below 200 feet when we're out there, and they're just driving around. We're pretty far away from the ship for a helicopter for one of ours. So what is it? So the first thing you look for is rotor wash. If you've watched any TV show that starts kicking the water up, and you can see that. It's really easy to see from the air. So we're like, no rotor wash. Matter of fact, don't see any rotors. Don't see any tail rotor. Don't see any, the main rotors are like, that's kind of weird. So as we're driving around, we're looking at this thing. We get to about the 9 o'clock position.
How far away are you from this thing?
I'm at 20,000 feet, and it's right down on the surface, right off our right side. So I'm probably maybe a couple miles lateral and 20,000 feet, and we're just watching it move around. And
so it's very small in your eyes?
Not overly small. I mean, an airplane down that low, it's 40 feet. You can see pretty well. It was pretty clear. So I'm like, okay. So I said, I'm going to go check it out. That's what we're trained to do. The other pilot says, hey, I'm going to stay up here. And I'm like, that's perfect. So now we'll get some separation. We'll get it from different views. And the other airplane, I kind of have a god's eye view of everything that's going on as I go down and check this thing out. So I start driving around, and it's still doing its forward, back, left, right. It's still pointing north-south. We get to about the 12 o'clock position. I'm just in a nice, easy descent. And a reason, because I've been asked, could you go more aggressive? You can, but when you're out over water, the water looks the same at 20,000 feet as it does at 2,000 feet. You don't You know, so you can easily put yourself in a non-recoverable position if you're not paying attention and you go into the water. So I got this nice easy descent. I get to about 12 o'clock, and as I'm coming down, you know, I could guess probably about, you know, 18,000 feet now, a couple thousand feet below the other airplane. The Tic Tac just kind of rapidly goes boop and turns. So now it's kind of pointing east-west, and now it mirrors us. So it's above the surface. We're up high. We're coming down. It starts coming up. I'm like, well, this is getting interesting. So we kind of drive all the way around a circle. I'm descending. It's coming up. And I get over to about the 8 o'clock position of the on a clock. And it's over at about the 2 o'clock position. Well, the quickest way, as we know as kids, to get someone, you know, you can keep going around the circle. Nothing's going to happen. You cut across the circle. So I'm about, I don't know, probably 2,000 to 3,000 feet above it. And I just kind of drop my nose aggressively, and I cut across the circle. And it's coming this way. It's because I'm trying to fly to where it's going to be, because I want to join on it. I want to see how close I can get to it.
Right.
And as I'm pulling up, it's kind of starting to cross my nose, and it starts to accelerate. And within about less than a second, as I start to pull nose onto it and it crosses right in front of me, it just goes poof, and it's gone. So I call the other airplane. I said, hey, do you guys see that thing? And they're like, sir, it's gone. We don't see it at all. So I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird.
Yeah. So that was like a whoa.
Yeah.
That's a big what the fuck moment. And it's funny because his story is not unique in the sense that there's a lot of pilots that have come out, and that there are reports that have come out from other intelligence agencies in other countries that have pilots that have seen similar things.
Yeah, I think they said Mexico in the Joe Rogan podcast. They said it was one. Mexican Navy.
Yeah, there's some. I think Japan. There's a couple famous ones. It's on Wikipedia, actually. There's a giant list of UFO sightings or AAV sightings that people have seen. So one question I actually wanted to ask you is, so after listening to this, what do you think this technology is? What do you think? Like after listening to all this and stuff and just getting an idea of what sort of intelligence it takes to have this kind of technology, do you think this could be one of our government's testing sort of new technology, or is it something that that's not from planet Earth?
So my thought is that it definitely cannot. I mean, not definitely. I won't say definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I have a strong suspicion that it has to be from somewhere else, not on Earth.
And that's just from your gathering of, like, the superiority of the technology, in the sense that...
I think Commander Fravor pretty much said it best. Uh-huh. He gave the argument that these kind of technologies are like revolutionary. These are physics revolutions. You know, he described when the United States invented the atomic bomb first.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a race between, you know, the United States, Russia, and, like, mm-hmm. what was it, China or something?
Yeah,
I can't remember the other nation.
Yeah.
But yeah, when you get these kind of leaps in understanding of physics, like, these are like game changers.
Yeah, they are.
You know, with atomic bombs also came nuclear reactors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these things are going to be massive leaps. And if you invent some kind of a technology like this in, let's say, an aircraft, this is probably going to translate into other avenues. So they even gave the example of, like, it could be in flying, it could be in cars, for example. Like, if you could have a car that has, you know, let's say it is gravitational propulsion. Your car could have that, you know, you could have gravity propulsion and other things.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it would not make sense to have been made on Earth or on Earth because the technology is so advanced. This would be some kind of revolutionary technology.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also the thing is with physics, as you know, physics is a collaborative effort.
Mm-hmm.
So if one person invents that, I would highly doubt the rest of the world would be that behind.
Yeah.
Like, think about with the atomic bombs, back to that example.
Yeah.
The Russians and the Americans were still neck and neck.
Yeah.
Because those scientists, are still in the same regime of physics. Mm-hmm. So then it's just a matter of who can figure this out quickly enough.
Yeah.
It's like a sprint more so.
Yeah.
This would be like instead of sprinting 100 meters, like you would sprint like a fucking 100-mile, you know, 100-mile marathon. Dash. Like, it's so far advanced.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense for it to have been made by someone on Earth.
Right. There are a few things that you have to hurdle. They're technologically, right, that you have to hurdle. Like,
you can't skip from A to Z.
Yeah. I know somebody, who was it? I think it was, what's his name? The agent, James. He said something. He said there was a sort of, you know, diamond in the rough and whatever he was saying.
What is he?
the guy that was, what's his name?
Oh, James Corbel.
James. Okay. Yeah. He was stating that, you know, our material science isn't there yet or understanding, but that's, okay, that's a novel thing.
This
but
is
yeah.
retarded James, Jeremy, I'm sorry, not James.
Jeremy.
Jeremy's retarded, side coming out again because he's talking like he understands what the fuck he's talking
about.
Yeah,
he said something about graphene and he got it totally wrong.
Like, exactly. He got it in his mind that, okay, I'm sure you heard of this, Juan, because graphene had this new revolution basically where we had these magic angles?
Yeah.
And then graphene has these new properties that are more promising for superconductivity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Jeremy had
I heard about it randomly. I work on this, actually.
Yeah. Oh, you did?
Yeah, but not with graphene.
Okay, okay. So I guess everybody's hopping on these magic angles now, huh?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
This was funny. Well, I won't get into it.
But yeah, let's continue on with Jeremy.
I was like, it's a cool thing, but anyway, he jumped on that. He kind of got the assessment wrong.
Yes. Remember, Jeremy's an idiot, so he's talking about things he has no idea what he's talking about.
Yeah.
And he's saying that the limitation is material science. Like, yeah, that could be one limitation, mm-hmm. but that's not all the limitations mm-hmm. there are in physics. The limitation is the fucking gravity propulsion.
Yeah, like, that's honestly
that has
the
nothing
main,
to do with material science.
That's really the main thing. I mean, there are like engineering limitations, right? So I will say that if we discover or if we figure out or solve superconductivity or room temperature superconductivity, mm-hmm. that would cause a technological revolution on its own.
Yeah, but that ain't going to give us
but
gravity
that's
propulsion
not
engines.
It's a whole different field. 100%. I agree with you.
So Jeremy's
so
stupid.
It might
Don't
be on that. There might be levels to this, right? There, we have to go through layers before we get to that gravitational manipulation level
right.
or amplification level.
Would fall under what regime of physics do you think? Who would solve gravity wave?
Well, you would
physics?
Need. You would need. I mean, people who detect these gravitational stuff are also condensed matter stuff. You have to engineer the thing.
Yeah,
to
you're
make
right.
it work.
I guess it could go a lot of ways, but
You would need to be
some kind of theoretical physicist.
You would need to be a theoretical physicist to know how to set up the experiment or the stuff to know what you're doing.
Yeah, I guess it could probably fall under a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean collaborative.
But it's going to be a theorist.
Yeah, it's going to be a theorist that would have to figure out what they want to do.
Yeah.
And then the condensed matter people would have to get together and you know, make it all work. And then bringing engineers
right.
and stuff. So I think I'm inclined to agree with you. It's a little bit fishy that this might be extraterrestrial. However, one of my concerns is,
I don't think it's fishy it's extraterrestrial. I think it's more likely to be extraterrestrial than not.
I think the number of sightings are a little bit fishy because I think it may be that the federal government at the modern day federal government may have stumbled upon this technology and may be researching at a level to where they're not able to reproduce it. You know, like because there's a lot of talk about backward engineering this kind of technology,
okay.
assuming that there is.
This is assuming Bob Lazar's story is true.
Assuming Bob Lazar's story is true, but also, but also some other stuff like
there's been crash landings.
There's been crash landings. The most famous one is obviously Roswell, but there's a lot of controversy surrounding that, especially with this. There's another physicist speaking of, but I don't.
Let me jump in here real quick
though.
Yeah. But the crash landings and all this shit with Roswell and Bob Lazar, mm-hmm. like I'm not factoring in any of that. To me, there's too many red flags where I can't really believe it. I am going with the information that I think is relevant to anything that could be remotely real.
Yeah.
And the only person I see so far that has any kind of real, anything compelling at all to me has been Fravor. And Fravor also, for people who don't know, Fravor's video is one of these ATIP videos, which is released by From the Stars organization. We actually did our first UFO video on those videos.
Mm-hmm.
So one of those should be in that first video.
Mm-hmm.
We won't play it again this time, but it's also available on Joe Rogan's podcast. They play, I think, two of them. And those videos are the most compelling to me. Everything else is kind of just, who knows?
To be fair, this is why I kind of have to say this as a disclaimer because we're going to get a lot of comments about this exact thing, how we might not take certain other documents seriously. But even when there's some compelling evidence out there, like, for instance, have you heard of the Majestic 12? Yeah.
That's not compelling.
Well, it's compelling in the sense that the guy who sort of unraveled all this makes a compelling case. Sten Friedman, I think he's a nuclear physicist.
This is the guy who debunked Bob Lazar.
Sure.
Pretty sure. Sten Friedman, yeah.
Yeah. So
he did a lot of research on Bob Lazar and showed how much bullshit he had.
But he's got his own take, which is on the Majestic 12, which was a government program started in the 50s to basically kind of create a cover-up of any sort of alien technology that might have been discovered, only to gain superiority over other nations. I mean, you just realistically, right? You as a government, you would want to have the best technology available.
Sure.
And also, it's a security issue, a national security issue. If you have stuff flying around in the air and you don't really know what it is, right?
Yeah.
So there's compelling evidence. Well, arguably compelling evidence out there, but we, like Terrence and I, we have to take what, video evidence, like what the commander's showing.
Yeah. And the fact that it's not only video evidence, it's also corroborated by a guy who has a very high position in government.
Yeah.
You know, he's like top 20 out of 6,000.
Sure.
You know, 4,000 mm-hmm. hours of flight experience.
Yeah.
A true professional by every metric.
Yeah.
So it's the video evidence coupled with that makes a very compelling case.
Yeah.
It's compelling, though, only. Compelling is the weakest form of, is it true or not?
Yeah.
And that's what it takes to be just compelling.
Yeah.
So any of the other shit is like almost not even relevant to me.
It's a lot of the other evidence is speculative. That's kind of what I want to get at.
It's like, okay, it's an eyebrow raise.
It might not be. Yeah.
When you get Fravor level of evidence going, that's when we start getting the ball rolling.
Yes. I 100% agree with you. And it's kind of, anyway, I just kind of wanted to point that out because I know the comments are going to be blown up with people saying,
sure.
Well, there's this stuff. So
we'll answer them all.
I also wanted to touch on a little bit of, what was it? So something else about what was it? The
is it related to Fravor, or is something it related to
something
else?
Something a little bit about what this guy Stanton Friedman was saying
about the Majestic 12.
Yeah, but now we can save it for another day.
Yeah, because I don't really know much about that.
I just know it's
kind of bunk immediately, so I didn't even look
into it. Yeah. No, you're good. I kind of wanted to comment on it, but we can say that for some other day.
Yeah, I know Bob Lazar used to call his clearance Majestic Clearance. So that's another thing I'll tell about Bob Lazar. And actually, we have a video on there, too. We could even maybe show it a little bit briefly.
Yeah.
So Bob Lazar uses a lot of like UFO lore in his story.
Ah, yes.
So all his things have something related to previous cases.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, Bob has Majestic Clearance, which is from the whole Majestic 12 scenario.
Yeah.
The aliens he claims are from Zeta Reticuli star system, which is related to Betty and Barney Hill, one of the first documented UFO cases.
Yes.
They claim that. And then he also has, what's the other thing? Oh, And the one in the video here is his gravitational wave generator. He actually took this from something else.
So we'll go ahead and show the clip here in a second. So this is on YouTube if you want to take a look at it. It's called the Lazar Tape from the Government Bible, in quotes.
What's the timestamp on
1991.
It?
1991. We're starting around 22 minutes and 14 seconds. So here we go.
All right.
So back to our power source. Inside the reactor, element 115 is bombarded with a proton, which plugs into the nucleus of the 115 atom and becomes element 116, which immediately decays and releases or radiates small amounts of antimatter. The antimatter is released in a vacuum into a tuned tube, which keeps it from reacting with the matter that surrounds it. It is then directed towards the gaseous matter target at the end of the tube. The matter and antimatter collide and annihilate, totally converting to energy. The heat from this reaction is converted into electrical energy in a near 100% efficient thermoelectric generator. This is a device that converts heat directly into electrical energy. Many of our satellites and space probes use thermoelectric generators, but their efficiency is very, very low. All these actions and reactions inside of the reactor are orchestrated perfectly like a tiny little ballet. And in this manner, the reactor provides an enormous amount of power. So back to our original question. What is the power source that provides the power?
Yeah, that's good. So that little clip was just showing it's not the gravity wave generator.
Well,
it's
first
like the
of
power
all,
generator.
Yeah, I have to comment on this.
Yeah.
He's speaking on it. I guarantee you this is 100% wrong. well, because he's speaking on something.
Don't guarantee anything, though, Juan. Okay. Save your skin.
99%.
There you go.
I'm going to say 99%. There's a very small chance what he's telling is the truth, only because we don't really know if antimatter, like, that's, here's the thing. A lot of, this kind of reeks of sci-fi. Because you use some things that you, like, people don't understand, like antimatter, to describe something that nobody knows about. So this antimatter is a sort of catch-all term because we don't know what antimatter is just in a larger sense.
Won't we consider antimatter just as matter with all the reverse quantum numbers?
Sure, sure. But physically, like, you know what I mean? Like, most people don't have an intuition for it, and you're like, yeah, sure. You know what I mean? Like, in sci-fi, they use it as a catch-all term to kind of describe something. Like,
right. But we can generate antimatter particles.
Sure.
We can even make anti-hydrogen.
Why aren't we producing gravity? You know what I'm saying?
Well, you mean anti-gravity?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't. That's another thing. It doesn't work like that. Antimatter still works the same way under gravity. It doesn't generate an anti-gravity
field. Well, then
field.
What's the point of this whole
thing?
So
that is actually the power generator, which I think powers the anti-gravity generator. The antimatter
matter.
See, it
sounds even more silly now.
Yeah, but the antimatter matter thing he's saying is the way to convert your energy into 100% energy. So it's the annihilation of the matter and antimatter that produce a photon so that you can get the full energy output.
And even then, that sounds like bullshit because...
Yeah, I think it probably is to me. But I can't really say because I don't have... I didn't think about it for long enough yet.
Well, to be fair, right? So there are other reports out there that show that you have like, these flying objects that are sort of, that people don't really know what's going on with them. They emit radiation. They emit energy in a sense.
So what does?
Some of these craft, like they don't... They're not a perfect... Like
because like Fravor was saying that there was radiation because had the infrared video and then there was actually like radiation around it okay
so I mean like these things emit energy I don't know it's like but then he's saying that how do
but
you
but perhaps that's part of the mechanism to working and it's not wasted
I'll
energy.
Have to think about it a little more
it's hard to say
it may just be that they're converting all of the energy into
usable energy.
Usable energy. But then even then that usable energy has to be proportional to the amount you're using. Where is it going to go? You generate it, you expel it as heat, right? So once you use it.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's saying you don't expel any heat. You're using every single part of that energy. Yeah. But that's because it violates one of the major tenets of physics.
Oh, 100%.
So that's what he's but the thing is Bob saves his skin by saying that it doesn't make sense. It's so advanced that it should not be possible. That's how he saves his own story. I have to give him that. I have to concede to that a little bit because he even addresses that it does violate the laws of thermodynamics, and it should not be possible.
I still don't think I still don't think what he's presenting here is the picture.
Okay,
but we'll say.
But the thing is, that's just my opinion. The real thing I wanted to address about that was
that's fake.
That thing is taken from something else.
Yeah.
I wish I would have found exactly what it was. I didn't have enough time to look it up. But for those who want to dig deeper, that setup came from another source. So my point was, you know, Bob references all these UFO lore stories. That generator comes from another thing. I don't know if it's UFO lore, but it comes from something else. And it's like a spitting image of something else exactly that's already been made.
Come on, Bob.
Yeah. Can't be sloppy, bro. He just only, I think, makes up his own version of it somehow.
Can't be sloppy, man. This is the age of the internet. Like, people are going
to... Well, this is in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah, he wasn't betting on the internet.
Exactly. So he could get away with it back then. He didn't have any conception of what the internet was then.
Yeah. What about any other physicists? Do you think... You said your boy Michio Kaku had something to say about all this.
Yeah, so I just wanted to pull up that video. We got that video queued up.
Yeah.
I wanted to put that video up because it's just showing that actually with Fravor's accounts and these ATIP videos and these videos released by the... Well, the ATIP videos are the ones that are unofficially released by the Pentagon. Mm-hmm. It's given scientists, like real scientists, the gall to say that we actually have some kind of credibility here. And Michio Kaku, I mean, even if you think he's like a crazy guy now because he talks about, you know, some loopy ideas a little bit, legitimate scientist. Like, he's a legitimate string theorist. And I don't think I've ever seen him ever make any claims like this where he would say that something like this is credible unless he truly believed it. So you can go ahead and cue it up.
So, first of all, trigger warning. He's on Fox News. You guessed it. Fucker Carlson. No, I'm just kidding. Tucker Carlson. Yeah. So, yeah. This is Michio Kaku. He's on Fox News to talk about a little bit about UFOs. So.
Yeah.
Michio Kaku is a professor of theoretical physics and the author of the best-selling book, The Future of Humanity. He joins us tonight. Thanks so much, Professor, for coming on. So with this announcement by the United States Navy, what has changed? What is different now that they've said this?
We are now witnessing a tipping point. You see, the burden of proof used to be on the believers to prove that UFOs are real. Now the burden of proof has shifted to the government and the military to prove that they're not real. But the evidence is overwhelming. We have all this information from U.S. Navy pilots. We now have metrics. We can actually measure how fast they travel, how high they are, what kinds of centrifugal forces that they can experience. And science, remember, is based on things that are testable, reproducible, and falsifiable. Now we have testable information, a game changer.
So given what we know about their physical behavior, but the physics involved in the way these aircraft fly, what do you think the chances are they were created by human beings?
Well, I think there's only two alternatives left now. One is perhaps they are hypersonic drone vehicles. After all, the Russians, the Chinese, and the U.S. are experimenting with hypersonic drones that can travel between 5 and 20 times the speed of sound. That's one alternative. But the other alternative is part of this game changer. We scientists have identified 4,000 planets orbiting other stars at night. Go outside tonight, look in the night sky, and realize that on average, every single star, I repeat, every single star on average has a planet going around it. And you wonder, is anyone looking back at you when you look at the night sky? So we have two game changers. We now realize that there could be over a billion Earth-like planets in our own backyard, and we can now measure the velocity of these objects. They travel between Mach 5 and Mach 20. They can go from 80,000 feet down to 20,000 feet in a blink of an eye. They can maneuver so that G-forces would crush any human being. All of it on videotape.
Given what you know about physics and its limits, given the behavior you just described right there, what do you personally believe the chances are that human beings have created these things?
What's missing is reproducible evidence. That's why I tell my friends, the next time you are kidnapped by a flying saucer, for God's sake, steal something. I don't care if it's an alien ship, an alien hammer. There's no law against...
He didn't answer his question, but I want to get to the point that I actually think there's a chance that this is something that we have invented in some way. Like, I think there's a possibility that this might be technology that we've developed on our own in some way through secret programs.
You think so?
I think there might be. I think there might be a chance.
So I heard in the video, Michio, he said that, you know, it could be hypersonic vehicles that travel, mm-hmm. you know, Mach 5 to Mach 20.
Yeah, yeah.
But the only thing I don't agree with that is, I think he might only be looking at one of the videos, like Go Fast is one of the YouTube videos. There are other properties of the UFOs that are displayed, though, that are not just hypersonic speed. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing that Fravor even describes is the fact that these vehicles just disappear and reappear.
Yeah.
That's like cloaking.
That's cloaking.
So that's not addressed, I guess, because that might not be in the video. So maybe Michio's only addressing what he saw in the video.
Yeah.
Let me think. So what? I guess maybe only the videos really are displaying hypersonic ability.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe Michio has a point. Yeah. So he can say that maybe the hypersonic ability is some advanced drone.
Yeah. It could very well be that is the case now. Yeah, because it's there's still the fact that you have to traverse these long distances, you know, light years to get from here to the nearest galaxy, and for it to have that, to have a level of visitation that's that frequent, seems a little bit kind of odd.
Well, I think if you've already mastered the ability to travel that mm-hmm. kind of speed, let's say if they're somehow manipulating space time, mm-hmm. then that's conceivable.
Maybe, but I mean, yeah, I mean, I just don't know. I'd have to sit down and really think about if they. Then if you say they've traveled in faster than the speed of light, then you get into causality.
Well, that's the thing is, we've come up with ways to travel, you know, at hyper light speeds, mm-hmm. superluminal speeds aren't actually superluminal. Mm-hmm. It's like exploiting the rules of bending space-time. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole analogy, you always see sci-fi movies where the fucking guy sticks a pencil in the goddamn paper and it's wormholes. That's a way to do it without breaking the rules of physics.
Sure. Yeah, it seems a little bit whatever, but I'm just saying that there's a possibility that these are all developments that come within our own kind of within our own government and maybe our own science. Maybe
I think it's
science.
From the videos that are shown, so the 3 ATIP videos, perhaps that's true, because we're still kind of filling in the blanks with the accounts of who took the footage. So if you just want to strictly base everything of your skepticism on the videos themselves, perhaps it could be man-made, you know, drone somehow.
Yeah, unless they get footage of actual orbiting, like something exiting the Earth, then, well, no, maybe even then it's...
Yeah, because he's saying it's going Mach 5 to Mach 20.
Well, the only way it could also disappear would necessarily be cloaking. It would just be
going fast.
It would just be going fast enough to where you're on.
But with Fravor, what he was describing was different. He was saying that it was a blink. It was like an instantaneous transfer.
Sure, but imagine if you just, in that moment, you...
Oh, you're saying that maybe the eye can't detect that speed.
Yeah, maybe you go, you just, boom, crank up the speed, you're gone.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Guy blinks and he's gone.
Yeah, because we can't really see, I don't know what our level of
refresh rate is.
Yeah, or what our refresh rate is.
For our own brain.
So it could look instantaneous to a human eye.
Exactly.
It could
very well be that, then again, we're getting into speculation because.
Yeah, but we can do that.
Yeah, but I mean, like, yeah, because
it's not the rigorous science podcast.
Yeah, Michio has a point, though. It could very well be that this is sort of, like he was saying, what are they called? What do they call it?
Hypersonic drones.
Hypersonic drones. Yeah. Here's the other thing. There's a lot of criticism about these things being driven by aliens. And that's something that I kind of wanted to address a little bit, because doesn't it seem rather fishy that aliens are sort of human-like? Do you think it's kind of convenient in a way? That these aliens are sort of have human traits but are foreign enough to make us kind of, ooh, that's kind of creepy. For instance, yeah. Large heads, big eyes.
You're saying, like, why do they need to be humanoid?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it could be. I can think these aliens could be all manifestations of our imagination. Like, we have no evidence of any alien life.
Yeah.
Like, all we are seeing is these weird crafts.
Yeah.
So we're not even at the fucking, you know, surface. We're, like, just barely on the surface right now because, you know, we're only basing our, you know, our analyses and things on the actual technology that we're seeing from these ships.
Yeah.
We're not even to the point of analyzing aliens.
Yeah.
So I don't know anything to say about that.
I would just say that it seems kind of convenient that when we talk about aliens, we talk about things that look like us, and then they're also hyper intelligent, because there are other examples of hyper intelligent creatures, right? Like octopi. Is that the right way to say it?
I don't know. What do you octopuses? Mean by hyper-intelligent? Because they're not smarter than humans.
I mean, they're not, but they're very, very, like, they can problem solve on level that's impressive.
When you're saying hyper-intelligent, I assume that you mean something far beyond human capability.
For animals, bro? Damn, they're up on the list for sure.
But they're not close to us.
No. But they're an example of intelligence in a species that's unlike us.
Okay.
Yeah, like, meaning they're not bipedal, they're not, you know, they don't have eye, like traditional kind of human eyes in a way.
Sure.
They have a cranium, but, you know, but they're very interesting looking animals. And then, of course, like dolphins, but they're not on land. They're not land creatures. They're also on the ocean. And they're also very intelligent creatures. Yeah, I think it's kind of funny that we make these creatures bipedal in a way.
I mean, there's been other aliens
in
things.
In lore?
If you ever played Mass Effect, I mean, most of them are humanoid, but there are some weird ones.
Yeah.
But like, there's an octopus guy in Mass Effect, but so I don't know what you mean.
But I'm saying the reports of people that have seeing aliens in these crafts and stuff, it seems rather fishy to me that we're going to humanoid figures. And even then, there is somebody made a, I guess it was like a skeptical thing. They were saying that there was an article written back in the day. I'm sorry, I can't remember the name of it, but there was an artist that tried to depict human evolution like 200 or something years ahead of its time. And the image that they came back with was these gray beings with large heads.
Sure.
And then this was sort of, this is what they could sort of root back to the source of where people got this iconography for gray aliens.
Okay.
When it came off some person's drawing about what humans might look like 200 years from now or something.
Okay.
So that's also seems kind of odd about all these reportings about alien stuff. So circling back to what I was saying, it may very well be that all this stuff I'm saying is brewed in-house. It might just be our own technology, that secret technology that the public is unaware of. Government scientists working on this, and not any. It might not even be extraterrestrial in nature.
Sure,
there's a possibility. So if you know, just putting that out there for you people that are hardcore, like, you know, UFOs mean aliens. It may not necessarily be that way. It may not be that there are aliens in these aircraft. It might just, like I was saying, it may be.
Judging purely off of the videos, that could be the case. The only other thing is there's other physics that are kind of defied in this that still don't really add up, if that's the case. Like, the thing is, Commander Fravor made note that there are no exhaust plumes. Mm-hmm. You know, and, like, for the video to have, yeah, I mean, there's drones still have exhaust. So to have none of those aircraft have any exhaust fumes, any kind of IR signature of any kind of heat signature doesn't really make sense. So, I mean, it could be advanced, super advanced, yeah. But like even stealth bombers have exhaust, mm-hmm. you know, and they have like one of the most minimized exhaust trails there is.
Yeah.
I'm not fully convinced of that.
Yeah.
I think that could be a possibility. Who knows? Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of taking in account Fravor's story mm-hmm. with the ATIP footage. And I think both of those combined make it more of a compelling argument that it's not a secret government project mm-hmm. from some nation. But who knows? If you want to only analyze the video evidence, which is actually probably more rigorous, then perhaps. But even analyzing just the video, I'm still not convinced, because you still need to talk about, you know, why is there no exhaust trails?
Yeah.
And there's probably other things that I can't think of right now.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And the fact that it had active cloaking, which is something that...
yeah, exactly. And it was jamming the radars, you know, with some of the most advanced equipment that's available for these FLIR detectors. I'm just not fully convinced that it's something that's on Earth or something that can be made by anybody that, you know, any governments that exist today.
Right now, it's a little bit 50-50 for me. Could be a coin toss.
I think that's fair.
Because...
I think I'm like 51-49. You're like 51 towards the extraterrestrial.
I mean, it's an incredible technology. Like, you know, it's incredible technology, you know? It just might be strange to see something like that, like see what he saw. You're flying over and you see something doing this, mm-hmm. just moving back and forth like this and then just oscillating.
Right, and we don't know of anything that has that kind of technology. Like, even a hypersonic drone would not have that.
Yeah.
Like, they don't move in that kind of disjointed fashion. Taking what Fravor is saying and the videos coupled, of course, eyewitness testimony is the shittiest form of testimony, no matter what kind of professional there is. But just with the fact of how much knowledge he has and him seeing so many aircraft in his life, uh-huh. for that to stand out so much in his mind... Mm. Promise me to give like at least 1% more towards the extraterrestrial.
That's fair, man. That's fair. So. And I guess anything else you want to top it off with?
I don't know. Let's ask the people in the comments what they think.
Yeah.
Are you guys more convinced by Fravor's story? Do you like Bob still? Mm-hmm. Have you changed your minds? I guess let's mm-hmm. just say what do you think? Is Fravor telling the truth?
Yeah.
Yes or no? Leave it in the comments.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe we can speculate. Do you guys think it's actually extraterrestrial in origin, or is it something from a top secret program that only a few people know about? And, you know.
Right.
Yeah, so sound off on the comments, please. And thanks for listening. Hello. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
For making it this long.
You made it again.
You did it. Congratulations. And, yeah, like we were saying, you know, please leave a comment, actually. And like the video, subscribe, share. Mm-hmm. Sharing is the most important thing. Sharing is caring. You know, remember back to kindergarten, if you can, for a second. Mm-hmm. And just sound off on the comments. You know, mm-hmm. are we bullshitting? You know, are we just talking out of our ass, or have we made a compelling argument for either case?
Yeah.
Are these UFOs extraterrestrial in nature, or do they originate here? So.
And yep, guys, make sure you follow our Twitter. It's at Eigenbros. Yes. And then also look at our website, mm-hmm. eigenbros.com. Mm-hmm. And we'll see you next time, guys.
Yeah. I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?